content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. We're going to start with an article that I've been reading about folks who had special vacations that they were either planning or had already taken or looking forward to. So today we're going to talk about Alan Cummings. And his dream vacation was to Chah, Malaysia. On a 2010 trip, the actor, 56, uncovered an uncomfortable family truth. The account of my maternal granddad's death never made sense to me. I knew he died in Malaysia after World War II. Britain sent career soldiers like him to guard the rubber plantations from insurgent communists. The story was that Thomas Darling, a decorated veteran, had died at age 35 while cleaning his gun. But when I made a trip to Malaysia in 2010 as part of a television program that traces famous people's ancestries, I learned the horrible truth. It appears my granddad died playing Russian roulette. In the town of Chad, C-H-A-A-H, I met soldiers who had served with my grandfather. They told me how charismatic he was, then took me to the cafe where he had been drinking the day he died. Every emotion went through me as I stood in the spot where Tommy Darling essentially killed himself. Is there madness in me? Is this why I'm reckless? And how moving it was that there, on the other side of the world, those men pushed to name a little street after my granddad, Darling Walk, and a park, too. Later, I took my mom, my husband, and my brother and his wife to see Granddad's grave, which is in Singapore, and then on to Chah. It's strange. You grow up thinking of your history in a certain way, and then in a flash, everything can flip upside down. But I guess that, as an adult, it comes with the territory. And on her to-do list, I really want to do the Trans-Siberian Express from Moscow to Vladivostok. I love being in places where you have cultural shock. It's so rare now that so much of travel is homogenized. And now let's go on to Cheryl Strayed. She is talking about Visby, Sweden. The best-selling author of Wild, 53, found magic and serendipity in a Szechuan restaurant in a medieval town on a Swedish isle. In the summer of 2017, my family and I ended up in Visby, on the Swedish island of Gotland, in the Baltic Sea. It's not where you would expect to find the best Chinese food on earth, but that's exactly what happened, and at a place called Surfers, no less. It's one of those restaurants where you order 10 dishes to split among four people. Everything the waiter told us was good we ordered, and then gobbled up every bit of it, a variety of meats and tofu and vegetables. Part of it was the food. It was really delicious. But there's also an intangible magic of finding a place like this. There's this sense of, wow, how did we get here? And on her to-do list, one of the most painful cancellations of 2020 and 2021 was our trip to Wales, a week-long hike on the Pembrokeshire Coast Path. I promise you, we will get there. Now, continuing with articles from AARP, the magazine, Medical Breakthroughs 2021, the shot heard round the world. Messenger RNA vaccines may do more than protect us from COVID-19. They may help to battle a dozen other chronic illnesses, too. This article is by Sanjay Gupta, and I won't be able to read all of it today, but as in the past, we'll do it in bits and pieces. On a cold Sunday night last November, Anthony Fauci, MD, sat bundled up on his deck having a physically distanced drink with a friend. When the call came, Albert Bourla, CEO of Pfizer, was on the other end of the line. "Tony," Bourla said, "are you sitting down?" Bourla had the results from the Phase 3 trials on an mRNA-based vaccine. He told Fauci it was amazing. "Tony, it's more than 90% effective at reducing the risk of developing severe COVID," Bourla said. For a scientist like Fauci, it was a deeply emotional, cathartic moment. A week later, Moderna divulged similar results. Perhaps the most stunning thing about these two vaccines, which rely on new mRNA technology, is how well they were shown to work across all age, racial, and ethnic groups. It's like having personal protective equipment at a molecular level. It turns the human body into an internal vaccine factory. And while you may fret that these new vaccines are just that, new, they are born from decades of study. They take vaccine technology from an analog to a digital space. The new mRNA COVID vaccines represent a new class of vaccines because of their messenger RNA technology. But the concept is the same. Introduce instructions to the body for making a protein that the immune system will tag as a bad guy. So when the real bad guy shows up, the body is ready to fight it. These mRNA vaccines do not contain the live virus that causes COVID. They contain only the code for a small portion of the virus, the spike protein. They do not affect or interact with your DNA whatsoever. These new mRNA-based vaccines for COVID have the power to inflict a double whammy against the virus. They stimulate the immune system to make antibodies and immune system killer cells. That's like possessing two kinds of ammo just in case one is not as effective. And while we are still learning how variants of the virus, such as the Delta variant, may impact the disease's ability to spread, there's no doubt these new vaccines are on track to save hundreds of thousands of lives. Most vaccines require some sort of booster. While booster shots may be recommended to everyone ultimately, their greatest impact will most likely be in those who are already at increased risk of disease, such as those of advanced age or with pre-existing conditions. And, of course, we know that now everybody is urged to get boosted. I had the pleasure of speaking with two of the chief scientists behind the Pfizer, BioNTech, and mRNA vaccine. Soon after the Chinese released the virus's genetic code in January, Ugur Sahind, MD, and Ulslam Tureci, MD, got cracking thousands of miles away in their German laboratory. They had been studying mRNA technology for cancer, but could pivot to tackle this new challenge. Previously, no new vaccine had been developed in less than 4 years. The race was on. Sahin and Tureci are a married couple with Turkish roots who founded BioNTech in Germany in 2008. As doctors who specialized in cancer treatments, they described for me the sense of urgency that cancer brings to people's lives. And when Sahin read an article in The Lancet in January 2020 about the quickly spreading coronavirus in China, his gut told him that a full-blown pandemic was upon us. Vacations were canceled, and Project Lightspeed was born. Already, mRNA technology had been tested to treat sickle cell disease and is also being studied for use against infectious agents such as Ebola and influenza. Sahin and Tureci expect the technology to revolutionize many areas of medicine, including cancer treatments. Speed and versatility are important when it comes to chasing COVID with vaccines in the years ahead. Changes in the spike proteins drive the variant strains, but our vaccines can still meet the challenge. As more mutations accumulate, tweaks to the vaccines will probably be necessary. But we can be well prepared for COVID's iterations with enough disease surveillance and routine sequencing to keep track of the virus's evolving characteristics. In the meantime, preventing viral transmission through vaccination is essential to contain the virus and foil its natural tendency to refashion itself. It may feel disheartening to know that we may have to live with COVID, a newly emerging plague, in our environment for the rest of our lives. But that may be the least of our worries going forward. Many pathogens, some much deadlier than COVID, lie in wait for a close encounter with our kind. Case in point, a few years ago, scientists in France awakened a gigantic ancient virus from its 30,000-year-long slumber in Siberian permafrost that's ready to infect again. Now this virus, dubbed Pithovirus sibiricum, only infects single-celled amoebas. Whew. But the discovery has scientists wondering what other microbes are hidden in melting permafrost, awaiting another chance to infect. If a 30,000-year-old virus can maintain its infectious abilities, other microbes are capable of revisiting humanity in catastrophic fashion, which is to say, there may be no such thing as total eradication of a virus. Devastating diseases like smallpox could come back to haunt us if we're not careful. The good news is that we have modern science and the lessons we have learned on our side. So, Medical Breakthroughs 2021, the new health heroes, life-altering new treatments for heart, mind, and more. We're going to start with the brain. First blood test for Alzheimer's disease. This is by Suzanne Schindler, assistant professor of neurology. Shelby Heilman, a retired respiratory technician from St. Louis, loved mystery novels, raucous games of aggravation, and developing her own photos. But about 5 years ago, something changed. Shelby started getting lost on her way home, says Cheryl Smothers, 74, Heilman's partner of 44 years. When her memory took a nosedive last year, Heilman, 80, decided to take the first ever publicly available blood test for Alzheimer's. The prescription-only Precivity AD test, on the market since late 2020, measures proteins linked to amyloid plaque buildup in the brain, a hallmark of Alzheimer's. It's intended for adults age 60 and older with dementia or who have trouble with judgment, problem-solving, or memory loss, says Joel B. Bronstein, MD, the CEO of test developer C2N Diagnostics. The test also checks for APOE4, a gene variant that increases Alzheimer's risk, then compares results with a person's age to deliver a probability score for Alzheimer's. 5 years ago, we didn't think there would be a blood test for Alzheimer's disease anytime soon, says Suzanne Schindler, MD, assistant professor of neurology at the Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, whose work helped prove the accuracy of the tests across a range of ages, health conditions, and ethnic backgrounds. In a 2019 study of 158 older adults, Schindler and others found that the Precivity AD test was 94% as accurate at finding brain plaque as PET scan that use radioactive tracer dye. Precivity AD is not without controversy. The test went public without FDA approval, drawing criticism from the Alzheimer's Association, although the company continues to pursue this avenue. In the meantime, Schindler says she expects to see growing demand for Alzheimer's blood tests. And we have a sidebar article here, Brain Therapies of the Future, Deep Brain Stimulation, DBS, for Parkinson's. Researchers are studying new DBS devices that monitor long-term brainwave activity, so stimulation is delivered only when needed, reducing side effects like erratic movements and extending by 50% the device's battery life. And focused ultrasound for tumors, at least 10 clinical trials are currently studying focused ultrasound and glioblastoma, an extremely lethal and difficult to treat brain cancer. Focused ultrasound uses beams of sound energy to disrupt cancer cells or to deliver cancer drugs to targeted areas in the brain. Now, last week in the Centennial Living Complete Guide to Heart Health for People Over 50, we were talking about your risk factors. And so today we're going to finish up that article. So this, we had gotten up to number 10. What is your waist circumference? Wrap a tape measure around your waist, right above the hip bones. Take it after you exhale. Don't hold your breath. 0 points, less than 40 inches and genetically male. 0 points, less than 35 inches and genetically female. 3 points for each of the next two. If your waist is greater than 40 inches and genetically male, or greater than 35 inches and genetically female. Having a larger waist indicates the presence of deep fat that's deposited around and sometimes inside your organs, which can impact their functioning and also cause the release of various hormones that increase heart disease risk, as well as the risk for other chronic diseases. Number 11, do you smoke? 0 points, A, no, never. 2 points, no, but I used to. 5 points, C, yes, I smoke. Smoking increases your risk of heart disease by 2 to 4 times. It may be the worst thing you can do for your heart. Number 12, do you have diabetes? No points, no. 5 points, yes. Like smoking, having either type 1 or type 2 diabetes increases the risk of CVD by 2 to 4 times. Number 13, how many minutes of exercise do you get a week? Count vigorous exercise minutes twice. Minus 2 points, 150 to 199 or more. This is minutes of exercise a week. Minus 3 points, 200 to 300 or more. 1 point, 60 to 150. 5 points, 0 to 60. The new WHO guidelines recommend getting at least 150 minutes of exercise a week, moderate to vigorous intensity. Increasing your workout time to approach 300 may be even more beneficial. A study in Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise found that people who spent more than 23 hours a week being sedentary, such as watching TV, gaming, working at a computer, driving, and so on, had a 37% greater risk of dying due to CVD compared to people who spend less than 11 hours a week in such behaviors. Being physically fit, getting exercise can compensate for these sedentary risk factors. Number 14, do you have any autoimmune issues such as, but not limited to, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, Crohn's disease, Graves' disease, or Hashimoto's? 0 points, no. 3 points, yes. The inflammation associated with autoimmune disorders, where the body attacks its own cells, is also thought to be a contributor to the inflammation that occurs in CVD and atherosclerosis. 15. Does a grandparent, sibling, or parent have CVD? No points? No. 3 points? Yes. 5 points? Yes, and one or more had a heart attack before the age of 50. Family history isn't included in the standard risk calculator score, but it's a big contributor to heart disease risk due to genetics. There are no good ways to screen for these genetic links, though. Having a family history of early heart attack should set off alarm bells. And finally, 16, do you have depression or anxiety? No points, no. 2 points, yes. Emotional disorders as well as high levels of stress can contribute to heart disease risk, especially if they negatively impact your lifestyle habits. Now, if you scored 0 to 15, congratulations, you probably have a lower risk of heart disease. But if you answered yes to some major risk factors, such as smoking or having diabetes, you should take steps now to eliminate them as much as possible. 16 to 30 looks like you have some work to do. It's never too early to make some lifestyle changes, such as improving your diet and increasing your physical activity. Speak with your doctor about your heart disease risk and whether any medications seem to be in order. 31 or higher, speak with your doctor, stat, and do all you can to reduce your risk, especially if you're 60 or older and have a family history of heart disease. Now, having talked about all these health issues, I think it's time to go back to the Prevention Finding Your Calm magazine and look at a few more methods of meditation. Meditation improves your mental health. Psychologically, meditation helps us get out of our own way, explains mindfulness expert Judson Brewer, an associate professor of psychiatry and the director of research and innovation at the Mindfulness Center at Brown University. The strongest link we have between meditation and overall health is its ability to reduce stress, which can trigger or exacerbate several serious conditions, including heart disease, obesity, and even anxiety disorders. The good news is, meditating can boost your mood. After researchers at Johns Hopkins University analyzed 47 trials, which included more than 3,500 people, they concluded that mindfulness meditation programs could help improve anxiety, according to a meta-analysis published in JAMA Internal Medicine. Long-term meditation can also help lower your depression risk or help treat it if you're already struggling, potentially because it has a positive effect on your brain chemistry, explains Rosian. Research suggests various meditation techniques curb the release of mood-altering cytokines, an inflammatory chemical that may lead to the development of depression over time. We have pretty good evidence now to recommend meditation practice clinically, either as a treatment or as an adjunct treatment for people who are suffering from anxiety, depression, or chronic pain. Number four, it reduces harmful inflammation. Inflammation is the body's reaction to something it doesn't want where it is, explains Roizen. In some cases, that's a good thing. It's the result of your body working to an attack, an allergen, or an infection. But chronic inflammation causes structural changes in your body that have been tied to chronic diseases such as cancer, diabetes, IBS, and even Alzheimer's. Meditation may help mitigate those damaging effects. In a study published in Brain Behavior and Immunity, researchers gave participants mindfulness meditation training or enrolled them in a general health improvement program. After 8 weeks, they used a fiery capsaicin cream to trigger an inflammatory response on their skin, simply because it's easier to test your skin than your brain. They found that the meditating participants showed a significantly smaller inflammatory response compared with those who didn't, which suggests that meditation may have the potential to reduce chronic inflammation in your body. And finally, it can help keep colds at bay. Meditation may be beneficial to staving off a cold. In a study published in the Annals of Family Medicine, researchers assigned 150 participants aged 50 and older to one of three groups for 8 weeks: mindfulness meditation training, moderate intensity exercise training, or a control group. As it turned out, those who received meditation and exercise training reduced their susceptibility to colds compared to the control group. The former two groups took just over half as many sick days as the people in the control group during the course of the study. Again, the relaxing effects are likely a factor, says Goyle, since stress can actually get in the way of your immune system's ability to fight an infection. Now back to AARP, the magazine, for one final article about people. Lady Bountiful, come and get it, how a grieving mother decided to feed her community. Social media is not my thing, but my wife, Sarah, happened to be looking at Instagram last year on the 7th anniversary of my son Michael's death, and that's where we first saw the Harlem Community Fridge. Michael, an advocate for food justice, would have loved the project, where anyone in need could come and get fresh food for free. I decided to start a fridge like that in my Bronx neighborhood in memory of Michael, who struggled with bipolar disorder and took his own life at the age of 21. I'm a special ed teacher and Sarah is a programmer. Neither of us knew a thing about this sort of mutual aid initiative. But by the end of that day, we owned a refrigerator bought for $300 on Craigslist. Next, Sarah and I walked along Broadway in our neighborhood and asked store owners if we could leave our fridge on their sidewalk and plug it into their outlet. Quite a few shopkeepers ask, "Are you kidding?" Before one of the owners of the Last Stop Bar said, "Yes, we've got to help everyone. He's an angel." Later, we moved a few yards away and plugged into the Jerusalem Cafe. We named it the Friendly Fridge BX. It's the first community fridge in the Bronx. At first, we bought food with our own money. But as word got out, we started getting donations from individuals, community groups, and local merchants. We received greens, breads, soups, salads, and treats from a Hebrew school, the local community center, a farmer's market, and a private college, among many others. New York's City's Food Pantry Network participates too. Nowadays, we refill the fridge 7 or 8 times a day. This past May 18th was the 8th anniversary of Michael's death, which is always a difficult day for me. I didn't mention it to anyone. A local food pantry manager remembered, though, and brought an extra abundant truckload of fresh produce, and we set up some chairs around the fridge. Sarah and I sat there, taking pleasure in the people who took and brought. We were celebrating Michael's life. We were celebrating the power of community. We were sustaining life. It was beautiful. The way we got started, begin with the basics. We met with the founders of 2 local fridges. We followed their guidelines and asked for donations of fresh produce. Now we also accept labeled, dated, homemade meals. Never say never. We pestered a Queens food pantry. They kept telling us our fridge wasn't big enough to receive donations. Then they asked if we could accept 600 USDA boxes. Sure, I said. We worked with the church to distribute them. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.